Welcome to Beyond Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, as Tara Reid says, I love you so much. My Twitter's not working so well here. I hope you get this. I love you all.
I like how that makes it sound like my Twitter's... I love you all so much that my Twitter's not working.
Right, like I love you guys so much, I cannot possibly send a tweet out.
I need to say this real quick regarding J.R. Smith. Jared Zwirling of ESPN New York spoke with J.R.'s brother and confirmed that the $450,000 armored vehicle he was reportedly in this weekend, at least he wasn't driving it or he wasn't in it, basically denied the story. Reporters, if you have the opportunity to confirm or deny a story like that, hang up your phone. Just we don't need that that's not going to hurt anybody. Nobody's getting hurt if it turns out that story's not true. I want to believe, Zach. I want to believe.
You know what? I still believe. What does Chris Smith know?
And wouldn't he lie? I think he'd lie.
Yeah, why wouldn't he lie? That it shows an immaturity of his brother to spend that kind of money so quickly. It's a protection thing, I get. Like, why wouldn't he lie? I'm saying Chris Smith is possibly lying. I can't say he's absolutely lying because, you know, I don't want to get sued or anything. But why wouldn't he lie here?
Exactly. So we're going to choose to believe that this happened and just go on with our lives.
Can I just also, let me add to that you never root for injuries. Like, there are some people that get happy when a player gets injured because it, like, quote-unquote, improves their team's possibilities. I think that's a really trashy way of conducting yourself just as a human being, as a sports fan, like whatever. Like if a guy blows out his ACL, a guy tears his meniscus or whatever, like you should never root for that. Like that's a horrible response to have. However, I don't know that I've enjoyed someone's Twitter as much as I enjoyed J.R. Smith since his injury. Because he doesn't really have a lot to do. Like, he can rehab and stuff, but it's not like he can do his normal training. And he is going into some kind of mode of searching out women right now. He's currently tweeting pictures of this, I think, a Brazilian model who is posting pictures on Twitter. And with, like, he's just retweeting it with, like, wow. And he's saying, like, I may need to get married to this girl and blah, blah, blah. And it's a fantastic ride.
I kind of you have to respect JR for no player in the NBA may be himself more than JR Smith. It's like him and Birdman.
It's like, I mean, Gilbert Arenas was there, right? And Now we don't have him anymore. And JR's like, don't worry, I got this, you guys.
It's always guys like to shoot too.
Yeah, you gotta get your shots in.
What's the relationship between Trill and being a gunner?
Oh, I think Trill is not apologizing for any way you like to act. And I think being a gunner is just simply, there's no filter for you. I think you can feel remorse for actions and you can feel like, ah, maybe I shouldn't do that. Whereas Trill, you're just like, this is me. This is who I am. And I think a gunner is a little more reserved in a psychological sense, but you get that ball in their hands, oh, the filter's gone.
And I think you have to say that point guard, because they have to make everyone else happy, is the least honest position.
Oh, point guard? Yeah, like, I mean, it's rare that, you know, Chris Paul will be a jerk on the court, right? Like, he's you know, he's hit guys in the junk before. He's constantly working the refs. He's constantly nitpicking at opposing players. Like, he's kind of a jerk if you just watch him and his mannerisms and the way he conducts himself. But other than him, like, there aren't a lot of point guards that act that way. And it is kind of this, like, you're the kid in the family that has to make everybody laugh, make everybody, you know, everybody happy, and it causes you to kind of adjust from person to person.
The argument.
Gunners don't adjust.
Idea. So, Chris Paul, he's actually pretending to be the guy that he is on the court, because he's actually this really genuinely good person that's involved in his community, was extremely active in New Orleans, is active in the Los Angeles community, is a really devoted father and family guy, is known to be really good to his close friends, is somebody that you can turn to and trust, and an extremely smart human being. And he chooses to adapt this moniker of the wolf, so to speak, in the famous Free Darko illustration of him taking off the wolf costume for the sheep costume. That he chooses to be that versus Steve Nash, who's actually more of a jackass and chooses to be nicer to try and make everyone else happy.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah. Chris Paul is a nice man that pretends to be mean, and Steve Nash is a jerk that pretends to be nice.
What about what's Westbrook?
See, now Westbrook is – that maybe is the crossover. I think that Westbrook is like a pathological liar.
Oh, wow.
See? Westbrook's actually underneath it all as a good human being, but has chosen to believe that he is this monster.
Yeah, like this is just the way he needs to conduct himself to be the player, to maximize his potential as an athlete.
Not even that. He's convinced himself that that's who he is. He – the mascot's half-court shot for Queso.
What if he's just like, he sees Kevin Durant and he's very much into like Eastern philosophy and he just believes in the yin yang. He's like, all right, Durant's this really nice guy.
There must be balance.
Yeah, I've got to balance this out. And then as Durant like gets into this KD is not nice thing, maybe Westbrook will start to go the other way to balance it out. Well, I'm going to ask him about that when they're in town. I think they're in town for the second game of the year. And I'm going to ask him, does he believe in the yin and the yang?
This should go well.
Yeah, no, this will be great. I'll have somebody vine it.
So getting back to JR, Knicks offseason report went up today.
Yes, I wrote it.
You wrote about it. I think this experience I had a couple times last week where I was like, okay, I'm going to have to write this thing. Here's some words about this team.
That's kind of how it felt. It was very much a, I got into like the, like I like we've got these sections. If you haven't read them, you should cbssports.com/NBA. And the first section is how 2013 ended, and that's always the easiest section for me because I feel like I watched every team, you know, as much as I could. I have a good handle on what they did. I gotta, you know, look up the stats or whatever to confirm like, oh, Dallas was really bad at rebounding, which is what it seemed like, or oh, the Knicks struggled on defense, which we all knew. But then you get the exact numbers or whatever, and then I get to off-season needs, and I was like, yeah, here we go. And the draft was easy because they only did the Tim Hardaway pick, and so that was, like, quick. And then I got to the free agency. I was like, oh, man, how do I explain this? How do I explain something I don't understand?
I found myself this morning because I wrote a piece on Bargnani, to kind of be as a compliment to yours, and I was looking at – you know, kind of the role, and I was thinking, I was like, well, doesn't Andre Bargnani being paired with Tyson Chandler, isn't that a good pairing for him? And I was like, yeah. So why do I still think that's a terrible idea for him to start? And I just kept coming to, Melo's got to play the four.
Yeah.
And I realized, I was like, well, why does Melo have to play the four? And I realized that it was because that's where Melo was at his best. And I stopped at that, and I was thinking to myself, I was like, there is no other team in the NBA, no other team in the NBA. That I would say that the rest of the team needs to completely sacrifice to make sure that one player is so comfortable in a specific position and is so maximized that it could literally mean that you do things that don't benefit several other players just to make sure that one guy is exactly where he needs to be, which might be even traditionally out of position. Now, I'm not saying that you don't cater to stars. You obviously do in every single way, and I'm fine with that.
Right.
But LeBron James can play the 2-3-4. You enable him to basically make that decision to be like, who do you want to guard? Who do you want to guard? What do you want to do? And you enable him to be able to do all those things. But with Melo, you literally are reconstructing your entire team around him. I called him the golden calf this morning. We've talked about this a little bit. I don't blame – it goes back to when everyone asks me what my problem is with the Knicks. I don't have a problem with the team. I've always really historically liked the team. I love the Patrick Ewing teams. I love the Marcus Camby, Allen Houston teams. I have a problem with the idea of entirely building your entire organization around one individual to the point where representatives from his agency are in executive positions and everything is built around this. I think it's a flawed approach, and I think it limits his ability. I think you have to give him discipline. I think you have to give all players limits and confines and not have guys run amok. And I don't necessarily think that that's Melo's fault. I don't think that – I think very little of this is actually Melo's fault. I blame it more from an organizational standpoint, and that kind of led me to Bargnani to be like, you know, he probably – like he needs to play the four. Like he is a four. I used to think like maybe he can play the three. He can't play the three. There's no way he can play the three.
No.
Like he can't play the three and he can't play the five. The only position that he can play that he can be successful at is the four. And so then you're talking about bringing him off the bench, but you also can't play Stoudemire. So you're talking about possible lineups that may end up featuring Andrea Bargnani and Amari Stoudemire, two players I like, and oh God, that lineup's going to be a disaster.
Well, isn't – when you play that lineup, isn't that a – you're committing to, look, defensively and on the boards, we're going to be rough, but we have to be great on offense with this lineup, and that's our goal. It's like we're going to ramp up the pace. We're going to have Bargnani trailing as the three-point shooter at the top of the key. We're going to have Amari diving down the lane. Like we're going to spread the floor. Like I think that's something where you're like, this is our change of pace lineup. This is not something we're going to necessarily think like, hey, this is a lineup we can rely on. It's almost like we're going to throw it out there for a few minutes and see how it works on a night-by-night basis.
Yeah, and I get that, and then I end up being wondering. I guess the question is how do you do the minute distribution? You know, if you only do that for 5 minutes, that's fine, but then it winds up where, you know, who's going to wind up playing where? I do wonder, however, as much as it's like, well, Melo needs to play the four. Woodson freaking out and going back to Melo at the three during the playoffs makes me wonder when they had injuries. Makes me wonder if he's still, if some part of him is like, I really don't want Melo at the four. I wonder if some part of Woodson really is like, he ends up taking too much of a beating. I don't want to get killed in the glass that bad. Let's have actually a four. And maybe if the idea is, because I thought of this, I thought of two guys when I was writing that piece on Bargnani, Novak and Tim Thomas. And I thought about, what if you're basically saying, let's take Novak, let's make him bigger, and let's make him a little bit better overall. And then if you combine that with, if he's Tim Thomas in terms of his career arc, then that ends up working out really well.
Yeah.
And that can be successful. I just end up worrying if you go away from what works and you sacrifice rebounding as badly as you do, is that going to be a major hindrance to them?
Well, I think my question is why the, essentially was a swap of Novak for Bargnani. Like, Camby, I mean, I know he thought he was going to contribute in year two, but what, I mean, the odds are probably not. And from there, I think, like, all right, so in the Novak role, Bargnani is a better player overall, but I don't think he's better in the Novak role. Like, Novak's a better shooter from outside than Andrea Bargnani. Now, part of that is they've been used differently throughout their career, but I genuinely believe if you put Bargnani and Novak in a shooting contest from the corner and, you know, from maybe above the break, Novak's probably going to win that. Like, I just think he's one of the most special shooters in the world from 23 feet 9 inches. And so then I start thinking, okay, in your mind, you've taken the Novak role and you've upgraded it with a better player. However, he's not as good in that role. So where's the added bonus? The added bonus is that you can do different things on offense to kind of, you know, maximize what Bargnani does on the court for certain stretches, but is that really good? Because you were at your best with Melo at the four, shooters on the floor, and just chucking. I mean, the Knicks were the third best offense in the league last year. And we, you know, you and I talked throughout the year about their ups and downs and whether you could believe in them or not. But even with as bad as the down times looked, they were the third best offense for the entire season. Like, that's kind of incredible. So what part of that system was broken in terms of that role, and why would you change it to, like, I think you need more shot creators, which I don't find Bargnani to be even at that position. Like, you need more shot creators within the flow of the offense to make everything work, and that's not what that role is.
I think the idea is, you know, one thing that happened whenever they couldn't deploy Novak during the playoffs because he couldn't defend, and then also teams were just like, just stay home, just it's okay, just stay home on him. And because the Knicks don't really spread the ball much, there was, if he got the ball and they were up on him, there wasn't anything he can do. Now, you can pass it to Bargnani coming off of a little screen or off of a ball screen. You can do a couple of things with him, and he can at least dribble three steps and pass the ball to somebody. Now, he's not like great at it, but there are a couple of things he can do. You can work him in the high elbow and give him the ball and kind of have him work as a pinch post guy. Again, he's not a good great passer, but I don't actively remember being, oh, God, Bargnani is terrible at passing. Raptors fans are screaming at this moment because there's absolutely nothing that they think that he does well.
Sure, but I get that Novak was easily neutralized by just staying out on him, but then you have sectioned off one tiny part of the half court, and the rest of the half court you're playing 4-on-4, which essentially gives you more room. So isn't that something you – I mean, in theory – I'm just talking about in theory. Like, obviously, J.R. Smith's taking 20-foot pull-up jumpers, and when Melo isn't attacking the way we like him to attack, then it's an issue. But if you're utilizing that space, I don't find that to be a bad thing. Just to, I mean, you're taking a defender out of the picture.
I mean, basically what we're doing right now is I'm trying to find some sort of justification or an understanding of the move. In reality, I think we both know that the answer is that, and this was reported, that Dolan said, wait, the Nets got so-and-so? Get me somebody. And they went out and said, you know, we have no cap room. We can't take on any contracts. We can't trade any of our good players, and we can't move Amare. We can't do anything. I don't care. Just go find me. I want somebody. Give me a name.
Wouldn't you – I mean, isn't this the point where you – if you're – what was it, Glenn Grunwald? Or is it Ernie Grunfeld? No, Grunfeld's in Washington. Grunwald.
Right.
If you're Grunwald, isn't that where you just say, but James, don't you remember? We just got Tim Hardaway. He made a comeback. And just cut off the junior part of his name and just trick him? Like, they look – their father and son, they look close enough to I think you could trick him. Like, there's no way he remembers what Tim Hardaway looks like.
There's no way he knows. Yeah. I mean,
and that's a name.
I think it would be a better approach, but, you know, I just don't know. I don't know if...
I mean, I wrote in the piece that if magically the Knicks got an extra amnesty clause and used it on Amare, like, whether you believe Amare can work or not, like, this Bargnani move makes a lot more sense if Amare isn't in the picture.
And right, if you replace Amari Stoudemire with Andrea Bargnani, then I can kind of be like,
yeah,
okay.
I don't think it's great, but I get it, you know.
Yeah,
like it's spreading the floor. It's not as cluttered as when Melo and Amari are out there, which just, you know, it just hasn't seemed to work. And like you can justify that, even though Amari is a better player than Bargnani, maybe the role works out better. But with those two, and you've got to play Tyson Chandler because he's the only interior defense you've got. God, that just, it's so weird. It's really awkward.
Yeah, it is. It's very awkward. And it makes you wonder if we've learned that every player is tradable. And what if in late September, early October, they do find a deal for Amari and we're just able to just like, whoop, got a deal, slipped him out.
Yeah.
That would be the ideal situation. That's really that makes most of the things that they did make a lot more sense. If they're able to get back multiple players for Amare, they look a lot better. They look in almost every way. This is all very painful for me, by the way, as a huge Amare Stoudemire fan for the last 7 years. But
I can just see the headline now: Amare Stoudemire fired.
No, on the New York Post back page. Yeah,
how about that?
Well, let's come back to this. So I want to ask you another question. What do you think of bringing Kmart back?
I think it's fine. I don't really know what it does for that locker room, but whether he's effective or not, and I think it's kind of hit or miss since he's joined the team, like he is a presence, and he is a presence inside. And whether opposing teams believe that he is a tough guy, he does seem willing to do the work. And he is somewhat of an interior defender, or at least puts in the effort. And I think that kind of output, just from an effort standpoint, is good for that team. I don't know that you couldn't find other guys to do that, but I think that's the way I would justify that move.
I'm trying to think of a team that's got good internal discipline, besides the Spurs, if they're an outlier.
I mean, the Heat. I think the Pacers.
The Heat to a certain degree, but remember in 2011, LeBron and Wade were making fun of Dirk in the finals, and that came back to bite him in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that shows they didn't have great discipline. I think it's a slip-up.
Let me kind of translate. There's off-court discipline, and there's work ethic discipline, and then there's don't do things that are going to wind up costing you in terms of don't piss off the other team, don't make I'm getting back to the dressing for a funeral thing. That's what I'm getting back to.
Yeah.
And basically being like, look, Martin, I just feel like he does these things. And to me, it's just indicative of it's less about the individual events. Like, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like, the Celtics made a good run and kind of came back, and the Knicks still won, and it was fine. It's more that these things always feel to me like there's no one in that locker room to be like, no funny business. Like, we need to be serious and not screw around right now. They need some sort of leadership, and I've never felt like Melo really does that. I feel like Melo's like a lead by example kind of guy. And I'm not sure that there's anybody in New York who's got the authority to be like, you know, let's knock off the crap.
Yeah.
Maybe if Kid couldn't do it last year, no one can.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, just talking to people around the league who cover it, who are in it. The way the organization is run is let's just say confusing.
Yeah.
Like it's oddly secretive in ways that don't really make sense, and it's really just, it all comes back to Dolan. Like, Dolan is the leader of that organization, and I think you can have the owner be the leader of the organization, but it takes a very special owner, and Dolan is not that owner. Like, Cuban, it works for Mark Cuban in many ways. I'm trying to think of another guy it works. Like, with Jerry Buss, with Dr. Jerry Buss, it worked. But with Dolan, like, I don't know that anybody, like, kind of respects the decision making of the crazy billionaire, other than they don't want to get fired. Like, it's more feared than respected, right?
Right. Would you rather have Meta World Peace and J.R. Smith or Chris Copeland?
Meta and J.R.
Okay. I'd rather have Chris.
I think Ron Artest is going to be a very good addition for them.
I need to specify that so I don't get screamed at. I want Copeland and whatever flexibility that would afford. Now, I'd have to look at the numbers. Maybe that afforded them zero, in which case I understand. Like, a lot of it was they can get JR back. They're paying the luxury tax, but they've got his bird rights. They can spend whatever. I totally get that. And Meta was off the amnesty wire, so I don't care about that.
Yeah.
It's fine. I guess part of it is, like, I really liked what Copeland brought. I thought they brought consistent, smart effort. And on the other hand, you have J.R. Smith and Meta World Peace. And that's kind of a weird contrast there.
I think the thing for me is, like, where is he going to play if they have Amari and Bargnani? Like, how do all those minutes work out? I would rather the flexibility of the other two. Maybe if Shumpert makes the leap, and not into like a star level, but just like a very good role player, if he makes that leap, then you'd probably rather have Copeland and Shump. But until you see that, I just think you gotta go with what you know you're getting, and you know you're gonna get some bad moments, but there are also some very good moments that I don't think Copeland can replicate. And maybe the consistency is a better option, but I think for that Knicks team, those high moments are kind of needed to keep the momentum of the season going.
I can't decide whether I think that Prigioni is good and just annoying, so I don't like him, or if I'm annoyed that he's a little bit overrated. I can't tell.
Yeah, he's not very good, but he's fine in his role, I think. Like, if this was 10 years ago, like, he was a fantastic player 10 years ago. He's, you know, in his mid to late 30s now, and it's hard for him to actually do things. Like, I think he's a steady hand, and I think that matters, especially on this team. Like, to have a steady hand directing everybody is very important. I'm less worried about them being so confident in bringing him back now that they brought in Beno Udrich, because I think Beno's an unbelievable addition. Like, I just think he'll be great for that team in that role.
Can Jeremy Tyler get some run, please? I like Jeremy Tyler.
Yeah, like, I like him from an entertainment standpoint. I don't think he's a very good basketball player. Like, he's a weird guy, like, doesn't know how to use his athleticism in game. Like, I've talked about this, I think, with Ethan Sherwood-Strauss. Like, you see him in warm-ups, and he's doing, like, 360s, he's going between his legs. Like, this guy's an unbelievable athlete, and then you get into a game, and he's just, like, he's wearing cement shoes. It's weird, and I think a lot of that is not understanding how to play. And maybe playing time would help correct that for him. But I think also he doesn't know how to really show what type of person he is on the court. Like, he's randomly mean mugging people, I think, to maybe fire himself up. But it's in the most awkward situations where I don't think anybody takes him seriously.
Right.
He literally, like, stared down Jan Vesely in the Summer League game this year on a breakaway dunk. Jan came from behind and, like, made a kind of a weak attempt to strip the ball as Tyler, like, cocked the ball back behind his head for the 200 dunk, but never really came that close and, like, kind of went flying by him from behind. Tyler dunks it and then just, like just glares at him, like, huffing his chest. I'm like, what did you – like, who do you think you just dunked on? What happened here? Well, I clearly missed something.
Do you think the Knicks got better?
That's a hell of a question. That was what the confusing part is.
You want the bailout C.
Yeah, no, I totally pushed on this one because I was like, their moves could work. Like I if you told me a year from now, like, hey, that was a really good offseason for the Knicks, I would say sure, that probably really was. But I also don't know. Like, it also just, like, I think I said that they've got depth, but some of it is awkward depth, and that's in that awkwardness. I just don't know how that's going to be resolved. So I don't know how to judge their offseason. Like, I think they're different. Maybe that's good. I don't really know how to judge them. And that's the thing. I'm not down on the Knicks. Like, I was up on the Knicks all year last year. Like, I love the teams that have decided to commit to 3-point shooting. They, you know, they set the record for 3-point makes by a team in a season last year, and I think they have a good identity within that. Like, I wrote about their selfish ball movement, and I think those are good things. I like this team, but I'm so confused by them. I don't know. It gets to the point where I don't know why I like them.
I think because they shoot a lot, Zach.
I do like shooters. Maybe that's it.
You like guys that shoot, and they all shoot.
In related news, I will be playing pickup hoops tonight and probably just chucking.
Who are their five best players?
It's Melo, it's Tyson, Felton, JR, and I guess Amari?
Shumpert?
Shumpert's not better than Amari.
Wow.
I mean, Shumpert doesn't...
You are not high on the Shump.
He just didn't show me anything. Like, he...
You better not let those Knicks fans hear you. They go crazy.
Look, I think it's great he, as we talked about, like, I think it's great he had a response rap to something that didn't concern him at all. I think it's fantastic. Like, he's talented. But it's just something where he came back last year and he was a good 3-point shooter. But it's also, it was one of the rare, like, he's never been a good 3-point shooter before. So I don't know if I should believe it. Like, it usually takes 2 years of that kind of production before I buy in to a player fixing their shot. And I just don't know how to judge his jumper. So if he's a 40% 3-point shooter for the majority of his career from here on out, then yeah, I'm in. Like, I think his knee will be fine next year. He'll be strong. He'll be able to play really solid defense and be, you know, the defender they really need on the perimeter. But there's still, you know, uncertainty with that and with his jumper. So I just, like, I will always kind of say, eh, I'd rather wait and see, but instead of just saying, yeah, that guy's good for me.
40% from the field, which is not good, 39.6, and then 40% from three in 45 games.
That's just not enough to judge whether he can shoot now, you know?
Yeah. I think part of it was interesting. He shot exceptionally well from the corner.
Yeah.
And didn't shoot well from the rest of the areas. That's kind of an interesting little
trick. And if he becomes Bruce Bowen, that's fantastic.
Right.
That's fantastic value for where he was selected. That's a great role player to have. It's just, I got to see him become Bruce Bowen first.
Now, what's your starting lineup?
I go small. I mean, I go Felton, Shumpert.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you kind of have to bring JR off the bench, huh?
I think you start him. That's what I came to. And I wrote a thing on Shumpert and Shumpert and him wanting to start. And Woodson basically saying, well, like, the only three spots that are locked are Tyson, Felton, and Melo.
Yeah. What about you start Ron Artest? You start him and Melo at the 3-4. You go Shump, you go Felton, you go Tyson, and then you've got your offense coming off the bench.
I guess part of it is if you have to overcorrect for last year where they took such a big step backwards defensively, because they were really good the year before. They were really good in 2012.
Top 10.
Yeah, and then they took a big step back last year, and that really hurt them. I think that's a really interesting question. I probably go Felton, JR, Shumpert, Melo, Tyson, because I want to bring off Bargnani and Meta together so that Meta can guard whoever the primary threat of the forwards is.
Okay.
And so if you have a versatile kind of do-it-all inside out post big strong 4 or 3 Meta can take him, because usually those are complemented by pure shooters at the other positions or a stretch four, and then Bargnani has a lesser assignment and you're not sacrificing as much.
I think you have to reestablish, like, the reason I go with my lineup is I think you have to establish yourself as a defensive team again. And I don't think it necessarily takes away from your offensive identity, because I think you can balance that out with the second unit, and then you find a balance throughout the game. But I think you've got to establish that you're not just going to be scored on easily from the start, and then kind of adjust from there. I don't know if that's a good strategy, but I think that's kind of where I would go based on how they played last year.
This is kind of a tangent, because I was thinking about this last night doing some research on a post I did on Paul George today. Off a great post over at IndyCornrows.com. And one thing I remembered was the Pacers were really dreadful on offense last year, and I think a lot of America that were like the casual fans probably don't know that, because you and I were like, the playoffs were going on. We talked about it during it, but to look back, like, how weird is it that the Pacers offense did what it did in the semifinals and Eastern Conference Finals?
It's really, I mean, they were a good offensive team at home last year. Like, I'm pretty sure they were good. But they were atrocious on the road, right?
Right.
And Miami did not play good defense against them, but they also, I mean, Indiana really committed to, hey, we have a size advantage, we're going to use it. And that's what helped them score so efficiently, is because...
And they took smarter shots?
Yeah.
Like, it was really... And so part of it... I'm not saying it's an outlier, like, good on Indy for capitalizing on an opportunity and stepping up. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. That's what the playoffs are about. But part of me is also like, am I judging New York too harshly? Because, God, what Indiana did offensively was a real outlier.
I mean, I also, like, Roy Hibbert was really bad in the first half of last season on offense, because he had the wrist injury and he couldn't, like, they tried to work him through it and he just couldn't score.
This is actually a really interesting topic, I think, considering, I think, especially things you and I have talked about across multiple series, which is this idea of a team that is bad offensively but is good when given opportunities. So
yes,
if you challenge them, they are bad, but if you allow them to be good, they're amazing.
I think that, you know, maybe Memphis kind of fits into that category as well.
A little bit. Well, I mean, I don't know. Memphis was still pretty bad. But that's kind of the point. It's like, there are teams that you can play bad defense against them and they're still not going to be able to score. Boston, I think, is a great example of that, right?
Right, right.
Where, like, Boston, it didn't really feel like New York was doing a whole lot. Boston just couldn't hit anything. Versus the Pacers, maybe, are a team that if you give them the opportunity, are going to make you pay. And maybe that's that actually might be like a cusp of somehow, like, the ability to judge a good team is whether or not they're able to take advantage of, like, if you don't play great, they're going to kill you.
Right, and that could be, it could also be something where, I mean, maybe it hasn't been up to this point, but, like, in the future, like, we see Miami hold back what they want to do in the playoffs throughout the regular season. Like, they just don't do a lot of that and then unleash it. But they're so talented offensively anyway, and LeBron's so good, and Wade is still really good, that they can get away with that in the regular season. Whereas maybe if Indiana, like, tried to do that, they would look so bad in the regular season on offense like they did this year. But once the playoffs come, if they start going to different things and Roy Hibbert starts making things and David West is just amazing and Paul George steps up, like, then the offense shows kind of a different side to it, which nobody's prepared for. And I know that's not what happened, but I think, like, there are certain teams that have that capability where they can rely on their defense all year round.
That's a really interesting question. I'm going to have to think on this some more. That's a real on to an interesting line of thought, I think, there. So C for the Knicks, kind of an incomplete.
Yeah,
I hate to. I know you're like, because it sounds annoying to the readers, right? Where they're like, we're basically saying, well, we'll see. Like,
but I don't know how you can feel confident one way or the other that they did a good job or that they did a horrible job.
There are teams that we do feel like that. Like, there are teams that we're able to look at and go, like, Denver, we're like, that was not good.
Yeah.
Like, they might still be okay overall, but as far as an offseason goes, that was not good. Versus the Knicks, it's like, they could be geniuses, they could be fine, or they could be like, oh, God, what did you do?
Yeah, because they just have so many options going forward, but you don't know how many of them are good or which ones will work. Like, and you don't know which ones they'll even try. Like, there may be a...
Are you excited?
Oh, I'm very excited.
I will say this. Are you excited for contract year Melo?
Oh, I love me some contract year Melo. Not just on the court, but the politicking.
Like, this is going to be part of me wondered if that was part of the Bargnani thing. It's like, we got to do something. Like, we got to do something. He's going to be a free agent. We got to do something.
God, makes you wonder, wait a second. Does this mean that Andrea Bargnani is the Glenn Davis to Carmelo Anthony's Dwight Howard?
Oh, it's so perfect, isn't it? Isn't that perfect? And then I guess, like, because here's an interesting question. If they're struggling, let's say that they're only a game over 500 at the All-Star break. Like, they've had good runs, but they've looked inconsistent. They've had some injuries. It's kind of a question mark. There's a big debate about whether or not they're struggling or if it's just injuries or whatever. If they're presented with an offer for Shumpert, that's going to be a really polar. Yeah. I'm hoping that this happens because it'll just be so polarizing because Knicks fans – are either pretty much devoted to Melo and Melo only, or a lot of them really love Shumpert. Like, they love the team and they love Shumpert. And like, Shumpert feels a little bit more like somebody you can like. Like, it's hard to. Melo comes with a lot of politics behind it, and Shumpert, he's fun to love. And I know a lot of the Knicks guys that we talked to on Twitter just love him. Like, Network and all those guys are really big fans of his. So it'd be really interesting if they feel like they've got, especially like a veteran upgrade, right? Like, somebody is known as like a pros pro, can really do damage, but also it has some athleticism issues or is getting up there in age. If it looks like an immediate fix, if they would move Shumpert to do that, that's like a really interesting question for me.
Yeah, that's I mean, because they kind
they
of
also,
should
like they could also be like 10 games over 500 and everything's awesome and they're fine. Like,
right.
Surprise me.
Just chucking threes, shooting for it. My goal, I really want a team to hit 900 threes this year. The record is 891 by the Knicks. The Rockets also beat the previous record, which was the 2009-2010 Orlando Magic, which was 841, and the Rockets got like 867 or something. I want a team to get to 900 this year, and I think it's totally doable with the way the league has moved towards the three-point line. It's like either at the rim or three-point line. Those are your two spots. And I think, like, I'm just like, all year round, we were counting more shots than points for Beasley. This year, I'm focusing on 900 threes. Which team is going to get that?
Is this part of your three-point thing that you're working on, or is it separate?
It is part of my three-point thing.
Okay. Because I was about to say, like, you should write on this. Like, you should do, like, a whole, like teams that can hit 900 threes this year. That'd be really – that'd be a good read, I think.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, this is good.
This was good. We got the Nets tomorrow, right?
Hello, Brooklyn.
Hello, Brooklyn. Indeed.
Hello, Brooklyn. Do you have your Medicaid card?
Oh. Hello, Brooklyn. How did you come about owning that house in Moscow?
Hello. Hello, Brooklyn. Have you forgotten where your home is again? Is that why you're out wandering the streets? But seriously, Nets fans, you'll be really good. We should also tomorrow talk about the Nets versus Knicks.
Oh, yeah, it's the rivalry that I literally don't care about. I have many thoughts.
I find it fascinating, so I'll make you talk about it.
I have many thoughts on something I don't care about.
Okay, I guess tomorrow, man.
Yeah.